Coming at you 3D this morning. Good morning, everybody.
Ha! Those trumpets. Way to start a Wednesday, huh? Good morning, gang. How's everybody this morning?
I'm good. Lisa, oh, okay. How are you?
I'm awesome. I've got my coffee. Life is good.
And that's
very
all
good. Very good. Right? Yep. Hopefully, everybody who's joining us has their beverage of choice and sipping away. Cool.
I feel like with this music, I need more fun beverages.
Yeah, it feels like maybe there should be umbrellas involved.
Yes.
You know? Nobody ever said you couldn't put an umbrella in your coffee.
We could totally do that.
You know, we could do that. I might.
I mean, even just Bailey's in your coffee. You know?
I'm in.
Just to start the day right. Very cool. Gang, we have our special guest this week is Lisa Goldstein joining us today. We have an official topic, how to build and manage a team of instructional designers. And Lisa has a lot of experience with ID teams and her own ID background and stuff. So maybe we'll get ourselves launched here with Lisa. Just introduce yourself to the crowd and I guess give us a little sense of how you came into this world and the world of instructional design. You know, the physical world, we all assume it was fairly typical. You were, you know, born and all that stuff. So the ID world, please.
Yes. And it's so funny. I think that we all have interesting origin stories. I think that we've talked about it before, Brent, how so few people we know said, when they were little, they're going to be in an ID team and they're going to go to school and they get a degree exactly related to this. I think we all kind of fell from somewhere or came into this from somewhere. And mine was the hospitality industry.
Okay.
So I, when I was, 16, 17, my parents, my parents went at a travel agency. And because of their love for travel, we were constantly involved in nice hotels, nice experiences. And my eyes were the size of saucers in some of the resorts. You know, Brent, I was in your neighborhood. I was in Scottsdale, Arizona. And coming from a place like Ohio where it's, it's gloomy. It's, don't get me wrong. My heart is always going to be in Ohio because that's where my family's from. But going to Phoenix, Arizona. I'm just kidding, Kara. But I loved it. I loved the big blue skies. I loved the resorts. I loved the glamour. I loved that there was so much going on. So many plates spinning at the same time. And my dream was that I would climb through the organization of one of these major resorts, maybe even be the general manager one day. And I took advice from a mentor who said to me, "All right, Lisa, if you're serious about this, if this is what you want to do, you need to go around and experience all the different jobs within a resort. You need to know as many of them as possible. Because if you're going to run and manage this world, you need to understand what it's like to be on the front lines and right in the mix of all the different things of what it takes to run a resort." So I took that advice and I was going around. I did so many different jobs, golf courses, restaurants, you name it, all within the resort. And the last job I had before I jumped into the learning part of the organization was I was running conference services. So big organizations like Ralph Lauren, you name it, these huge companies would bring in their employees or, whatever their structure was of their event. There'd be thousands of people renting out all of the hospitality space, all the conference space. They would do breakfast, lunch, dinner, golf events, you name it, all sorts of excursions. And my job was to manage that world and to help to make sure that those events were successful. 9/11 hits and hospitality takes a huge hit because of the decline in the economy. And they're cutting back on a lot of the you know, extra frivolous, you know, everything. And my department had a huge impact and there was a lot of reductions. And they said, while we need to refocus our energy on how we approach things, you know, here, we're going to do a little bit, you know, less conference space because companies aren't booking it because they don't have the money for it. We'd love to retain you in the learning department. And in my mind, I was listening to my mentor saying, okay, this is one more job. This is one more area of the business that I need to get to know. And I'm going to do it for that reason. And not long into the job, I realized, holy cow, I love this work. This made me feel so fulfilled. And I absolutely loved the experience. I fell head over heels in love with learning. And then there I was.
Very cool.
And
the rest is history, as they say.
Yes.
Yeah. No kidding. You were mentioning like nobody, you know, goes into this intentionally. It's not like there's a table for instructional designers at the job fair in high school, right?
You know,
you didn't walk into it and go, oh, I could train people.
Look at all the people standing around that booth. I wonder what that job is.
That's where the cool kids hang out, right?
It's funny. I have a 10-year-old who just had career day at her school. And we actually had this conversation about all the different kinds of parents who came in. There was a florist, there was a firefighter. And I said, gosh, I wonder if your friends would be super bored if I came in and talked about my job. Would they be excited? Would they think it was interesting? And my daughter says, no, we're good. You can stay home, Mom.
My own kids struggle to explain to people what it is that I do.
Yeah.
So what is your, I don't know. He works at some company. Yeah, I think that's about as far as they typically often traditionally have explained it. So,
yeah. My daughter says, I have enough teachers at school. We're good.
Oh. Brutal.
Anyway, so, you know, just to put a cap on that story, a bow on that story, you know, I've gone around now over the last 20 something years since 9/11. And, done all the different kinds of jobs inside of the learning space now. And I think that probably was partially exploratory for me, you know, finding ways and to better understand what we're doing. And maybe even a bit of that was my mentor still in my head, you know, go around and do every job within the learning space before you decide you're going to go off and manage an entire learning team.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you certainly need to have you know, that foundation, that sort of touchstone, just sometimes even just about simply communicating, you know, using the right language to communicate with people in different roles, even to be able to talk, you know, specifically what, you know, design language versus, you know, programming language to get to maybe get things, you know, everybody on the same, channel together.
Right. And I think on top of that, you know, I think the reason to be in management is not because it's the next step in your career. It's not because, you know, you shouldn't do the job just because you think that is the right next step for you. It's the logical progression. I think you have to remember why we do what we do. And I think that the most important reason to manage a team in this space is because you are going to fully love them in a way where you are a servant leader. You exist to help them be successful. And it's important to love that job, to love that role, because if you don't, it's not just about whether or not that's the right decision for you. You're not doing your team justice if you don't love them properly.
Yeah, and you've got a great origin story in the management side of things, right? Like there's the origin story of getting into this world of instructional design and learning and whatnot, but then that making that, I guess it'd be an origin transition or something like that. I don't know. Getting into that management piece. Tell us that story.
I think what it is for me is another piece is that I feel like I can see where the stars align. I think about what is it that the company is trying to accomplish? What do people need to be happy and successful? I feel like I'm constantly looking out and paying attention to, I think about our conference experiences, Brent, where when you go to a conference and if you don't know anyone, if you haven't built your own personal network yet, you can go to an event where there's thousands of people and you can feel so alone. And I feel like I've felt that for myself, and I've watched others experience that, and my heart goes out to people like that. And so I think that I've made it part of my cause to reach out to those individuals, you know, immediately if I see somebody sort of the alone face, or, you know, looking around like what's next, you know, I feel like I try to bring those people in and to love them. And I ask questions about where they are, what do they need, to make sure that people are cared for. And I think it's that same sort of mentality that you bring to work, you know, and you watch out for your coworkers. You know, if you've got that coworker who's like, oh, what's next? You know, I'm kind of figuring this thing out. I'm afraid to ask questions. I don't want to look dumb. You know, you look out for those people and you love them in management, just like you would in real life. You would, I'm sure the two of you, and probably many of the people watching here, you would do the same at a conference, for example. You would, if somebody looked lost, you know, or alone, you would chat them up, make sure that they're good and they have what they need. So same thing at work.
Yeah, I had a receiver aspect of that when I was in my very first class, first year of university, and in a hallway or a stairwell going up into the largest room, the largest speaking hall on campus, which holds like 2,000 people. And then afterwards, as I was leaving, a guy sort of tapped me on the shoulder and said, started chatting or whatever as we were leaving. And then we ended up, I don't know, probably going and grabbing a coffee or something. Anyway, I said something or other at some point. He said, yeah, he said, I saw you were ahead of me in the line. He said, you were looking like I was feeling. Mm. And I went, oh, okay. I kind of had a look on my face. And anyway, being the receiver of that kind of reflection itself is very empowering and gosh, awfully important too.
I think also, you know, in this industry, we get into this space because we get our own sense of high, our own sense of accomplishment from helping others, right? My experience is most of the people in our space are good empathizers, most of them. And because of that, you know, it's, you know, we do what we do to make a difference in somebody else's life, to help empower them so that they can be successful in all ways, not just so that you can know more about, you know, this widget and how it works. Let me give you an e-learning on this widget. It's not just so you can understand this widget. It's so that you can be successful with that widget, so that you can perform well and feel engaged and be happy and do it well and do it in a community. We also, in the learning space, we, because of how much we love social learning and understand how we learn from each other, we're also good at communities and engagement, or should be.
Yeah, since you've managed a team of instructional designers before, what is that, you know, I mean, maybe could you compare it to maybe some other management roles that maybe you had, maybe when you were doing the hospitality stuff?
You know, I actually have a slide. I want to show you something because there's a lot of, let me see. Let's see. I have to go over here. You hit this little share button. Bam, bam. All right. Tell me when you can see my screen.
Yep.
Awesome. I think, you know, really, truly, to answer your question, there's a ton of similarities. This is actually, here, let me get rid of this little guy here at the bottom so you can properly see. There's a lot of similarities, right? Because no matter what, you're managing a team of people and you want them to be happy and fulfilled. And a lot of the concepts you're seeing here, I did not invent. This is from, you know, it's part of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, Gallup, you know, a lot of these pieces are from Gallup and lots of organizations who help teams to be successful. And I think that there's tons of commonality between any kind of management job, no matter what kind of team you're managing. I think if you're coming in and you're a first-time leader, especially coming into a group whether you're building a group for the first time and you just hired everybody in, or you're coming into an existing group, either way, I feel like it's important to not start at the top of this pyramid. You really have to make sure the bottom is taken care of first, because if people don't have the basics of what they need, they're not going to be ready for next level stuff. they're going to have this sensation of, well, but I don't have, you know, something that's more important, you know, near the base of this pyramid. So if you want, if you guys think it's appropriate, I could just really quickly talk through this. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Let's do it.
All right. So at the bottom of this pyramid, it's, and a lot of this stuff is going to feel pretty obvious, but when you first come into a team, you want to make sure, do they have what they need to do the job? I mean, it sounds basic, but I have certainly come into organizations where they say, yeah, we don't have a lot of money, so we're going to give you these 10-year-old laptops, but we want you to make us the most amazing e-learning that we've ever seen. And, you know, I'm sure anybody who's designed before is probably chuckling to themselves right now if you're listening to this. If you've ever tried to make something epic, but you don't have epic resources, if you don't have a computer that can keep up with how fast you click around and want to design and render videos, and instead you're feeling frustrated waiting for your computer to keep up with you, that's not a fun experience. If you don't have the right software, if you don't have something epic like Domino Flow, then you're not going to do what you need to do as well as you possibly could. And I put SMART goals here because I think it's really important that it's really specific to know what you're going after. Individuals need to know exactly what you want from them. You can't say, this year, I want you to be a better instructional designer. You have to have the same measuring stick. You need to watch out for miscommunications. You have to know specifically what you want out of somebody. So SMART, of course, it stands for smart, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time bound. So every time you are setting goals for your people, you need to make sure that it hits the mark for all of those things so that at the end of the year, you don't, or whatever your measurement period is, 6 months, whatever, you don't say, oh, I really wanted you to be a better instructional designer. And they say, well, I did. I went off and I learned X, Y, and Z, and I know these things now. If that's not what you wanted them to learn, if you didn't give them, you know, smart enough goals, you're not going to be on the same page and you're not going to get out of that individual what you want out of them. And they're not going to be able to get what they need out of you. And I would actually say, I'm going to take a risk here and say, I think not only do you need SMART goals, you know, for the basic needs category for individuals, you also need SMART goals for what you're trying to accomplish in your team, in your organization, and your entire company. You need to know exactly and be singing off the same song sheet.
When it comes to those goals, it's important to align them, you know, with the business goals too, right? I mean, typically, often you see that info, you know, what's the business telling us we need to do? We need to increase, we need to reduce, we need to improve. And then everyone's goals, SMART goals, then, you know, typically need to work towards meeting those larger business goals too.
Yeah, and it matters also for the projects that we do. We have to be, I mean, I think that there's going to be a lot of people listening to this who feel this also, that it's the same sort of idea for when you approach a project. You can't have a stakeholder come to you and just say, I need training on customer service, and you take it from there. You have to be able to know really specifically the SMART goals for your learning project also, so that when you are going off and you are taking care of needs, you have something so measurable that when it's over, you can actually know for sure whether or not you moved a specific needle. Because it's the same thing. If your goals for your learners are improved customer service, well, what does that mean? What are you actually measuring? You have to find something so specific, like you're running a call center, your customers are on hold for 2 minutes or more, that's not acceptable. They have to be on hold for only 30 seconds or less. You have to have more touch points with your people. Here's what you need to do, X, Y, and Z efficiently so you can get back soon enough. They have to be really specific SMART goals for your learning also. And you need to be able to not only provide SMART goals to your people, but show them how to build SMART goals and turn them into experts in doing that so that they too can be a cheerleader for SMART goals and have better projects with better ROI.
Yeah, for sure. We need a course on. Okay, but what do you need that to achieve?
Yeah, exactly. All right. So once they have, you know, the basic needs, I think, so a lot of models name this next category management support, but I really think management support really happens in all of these layers, not just this one, but this is where probably the most work happens for management, because it, most of this is not really what your people are doing, but it's what you're doing. And if you compare this model to the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you can see a lot of the correlations where, you know, it's talking about sort of the same things at this level. But this is where management does a really good job to continue to develop your people. So you've taken those SMART goals, and now it's about how, if they are struggling to reach those SMART goals, why is that? What do they need so that they can do their best? And when you're doing this whole process, you're doing it in a way that you show that you really care. You're not doing it in such a way where it's, you know, it's the carrot or it's the stick method where, you know, they're going to be punished if they can't meet their SMART goals. You need to lead with the carrot and make sure that they have what they need to be successful, to meet those SMART goals, and recognize them for when they do it. And make sure you understand, in order to recognize somebody properly, you need to study, I know it sounds silly, but you need to understand the love languages and try and understand how that correlates at work. How do people like to be recognized, whether it's, you know, through a love language, through it's just, you know, simply asking them, you know, how do they like to be recognized? There's been plenty of times where I've publicly recognized somebody to the group, and they've then told me later that they were terrified that I did that, and they begged me, please, in the future, can you just tell me one-on-one? Please don't call me out like that in front of a group. And I meant well. Of course, I just, I wanted them to be celebrated.
So where do you stand on Myers-Briggs and those types of people messages and whatnot? I mean, not messages, but...
I know that there's a lot of reasons why people don't like them. I know that people don't like to be characterized and the fear of what you're going to do with that characterization. But I like it because, you know what I hate right now is that I can't see your face. I have to go back to you for a minute. I need to stop. For just a minute while we talk about this, because all I can see is my slide, and I really
I don't mean to derail you, but
no, I'll come back.
I have love languages, so I figured it was a good opportunity to have this conversation because I think it's important.
Yeah, it is important to me. I value those things. I take everything with a grain of salt, of course, because I think you know, if you are you know, too hyper focused on something, you know, on putting somebody in a bucket, it's not going to help. But I really value those things because right. It helps to understand how people process information. I think a huge complaint, a common complaint that you hear when somebody's complaining about their leader is, I came to my boss with this idea and they turned me down and said, you know, why they disagreed or whatever. And then a few days later, they announced to the group this idea, which basically I brought to my boss who said it was a bad idea. And now they're claiming it as their idea. And it's common because it's a way that people process information. If you can use Myers-Briggs to understand how people process information, and there's so many clues that you can look for, you don't have to wait for your team to all be measured. And now you know because you found out what buckets they fall into. It's more about paying attention to behavior. Now, a good way to find somebody who might, you know, with naturally, innately, that might happen to them, or they might act that way. Sometimes there's two ways that people tell stories. So if somebody wants to tell you about their vacation, there are some people who can't wait to tell you the highlights. Oh, on this trip, we went skydiving for the first time and it was amazing. And here's like the biggest punchline, my biggest takeaway. And then there are some people who say, I need to tell you about something epic that happened on this trip. But first, you got to hear, like, first we were going to the airport and first, you know, and then this, and like, I'm getting there. I'm going to tell you my highlight, but I got to tell you everything else in order first because it all, you know, matters. So sometimes if there's some correlations with the way that we process information that can give you hints. And if you understand the way that people process information, it gives you the ability to work with that style, to have patience. You cannot force people to think the way that you think. You cannot go out and just make more clones of you because it's going to make your life easier if everybody just thinks like you do. You have to accept and embrace the differences in people and just understand how to work with them.
Yeah. We like to make fun of those scales a lot, and I hear a lot of people bashing them all the time. And I get what people are saying when they say there's no research to prove that it's effective and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, well, I don't really need the research to know that understanding and caring about people and getting to know how they think and how they process information would probably be helpful for me in being better equipped to just have a relationship with them, right? Because that, at the end of the day, is really what we're talking about, right? Is how do you connect with these other human beings that you are trying to pull together into a group and all march towards a common goal? So it makes sense to understand each of those individuals a little bit better.
It's so true. They're just tools. And it's like this. Most people have a kitchen, but doesn't mean that they're good at cooking, right? You may have the tools, to cook. Doesn't mean that you're going to be a great chef. It's about taking the time to understand your tools and practice.
Yeah, exactly. It is. So are there, what are some common things you see? And I want to get back to the picture too. I want to finish off the two top parts of the image too, but I'm just dying to know, are instructional designers tough to manage? I mean, is it hard?
No way. Those are my people. Okay. I love them. And again, it's about, if you're going to get into a space where you're going to manage a population, make sure you love that population. And I love them because I can understand them also. I think that comes as
you've done the job. Yeah.
I've done the job. I know where the pain points are. I know where it hurts when you feel like, oh, if only I had, then I could really do this job well. So it's understanding what people need in this space in order to just rock it. It's really interesting, right? Because we are experts in helping other people to be successful. And how often do you see that we don't use that same skill set for ourselves? It's so interesting, that we can do such a good job to empower a large organization of learners. And yet for maybe a small team of like 5-10 people, we don't give them the same love. Anyway, you want to go back to the slides?
Yeah, let's jump in.
Okay. All right, so
interrupted by the chat. We do have a question in the ask a question section. Yeah. When we finish here, then we'll go there next, just to kind of, I want Kara to know we're not forgetting about her and her questions. So.
Oh, and we can do that anytime. So feel free to interrupt me. No rules. I'm flexible.
Right.
So, as managers, not only is that, all of that is our, responsibility, but it also means keeping the team really well organized, make sure you're prioritizing what matters most. Because it's your job is not just to take care of people. You also have to manage your business. You have to make sure that your business is managed well, because if you create an unorganized business that doesn't make sense, like why are we concentrating on that when something more important is going on? You have to make sure that you do that really well. So take care of your people, but do a really good job taking care of your business and make sure you're going after the work that matters most and has the biggest impact for your company, for your audience. It's the biggest bets for your company, what matters most. So that goes back to your basic needs of understanding in SMART goals. First, you have to know what matters most to your company in really, really specific details so that in turn, you can run a really effective business. So from there, I put a lot of work into community. When I'm trying to help a community, so in other words, helping there to be less silos between departments, helping people to love each other more, not just love themselves and their job and make sure they have what they need, but making sure that the people around them have what they need. So true teamwork is understanding your peers. And two things that I encourage people to remember about each other is to always remember, of all the people you know, of all your coworkers, What are they most passionate about? Each person, you know, what matters most to them? And it could be one thing, it could be many things, but at least one thing. Remember what people are passionate about. And then remember, what do they need most? And that need might constantly change. So you might have to get updated information on a regular basis. What's the number one thing that they need right now? You should always know. If you have coworkers, you should be able to answer in your head right now, what does each of those people need? And what are they good at? And it gives you the opportunity to be a better coworker so that you can make connections. You might stumble naturally upon a webinar, a piece of information, a book, an experience, anything that another person who is also passionate about that thing that one of your coworkers needs. So now you can make that connection. You can say, oh, Chris, didn't you know that's actually something that Brent is an ace at? You should talk to Brent about that. He actually has blah, 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 blah to help you be successful at that.
Brent's an ace at something? That's what Chris always says. What do you mean?
Brent is the ace up our sleeve.
Yes. and
Chris and I geek out on guitars. That's our thing.
Yeah.
And if you do this well, if you help everyone to be successful, the more your teammates are successful, the more you're going to be successful as a team, and your quality is going to go up. You know, it's you should never have the sensation of a peer, a fellow department at work is your competition. Your success is not measured based upon how much better you are than your coworker or the next learning department, if you have more than one learning department at your company. You need to turn your competition externally to, you know, maybe it's the industry, maybe you're gonna compete at Demo Fest, maybe, you know, find an external place to compete. Don't compete with your coworkers. Support your coworkers. They have, you know, this common goal, common enemy, common, you know, things to fight for so that you are a really strong team and make sure that your people, your coworkers, get what they need. And make sure that you create a safe environment where everybody's opinions count.
Love it.
And, you know, the idea is that by the time you've mastered those first three categories, you technically have an amazing department. Because if you can do all of these well, yeah, you will have mastered a really well-oiled, well, you know, high-functioning team. And then from there, all that's left is how do you get better? And now you can be in this place where you are innovating. You can say, well, we already do the basics well. Now we need to invent something. Now we need to do something that other companies aren't doing. How can we take this to the next level? How can we break down this idea that you learn one way outside of work and then you come to work and you learn a different way? How can we bring in modern things? You know, this is where all the innovation and excitement happens. So the goal is to get to that place, but you can't get to that place until these other three places are really well taken care of.
And any other questions in the chat that you guys have about those any of those segments? While we're queuing up the other question, can you see the ask a question down there, Lisa?
I'll read it.
Ask a question. Let me see.
Hey, Lisa. Do you have any stories about how to manage an L&D team where the organization doesn't support the function?
Yeah,
coming at us from Kara.
Gosh, there's so many things that could come out of that. I'd love even something more specific so that I could, you know, help you solve for something more specific. But I think to the point, this is where as a leader, you also have a job to connect your people to the business. I think it's about having brave conversations. I think in this pursuit to have smart goals, you exist for a reason, right? Your department was put there for a reason. Somebody said, well, we need a learning organization because I believe in the value of that. And so you need to find those people first and foremost who absolutely believe in that. And if not, help them to see the value, and you can talk about it, you know, in smart language, just like you would about everything else you do, just in the way that you would sell to a stakeholder, I understand your performance problem in your business. And I, through lots and lots of questions that I've asked you, looking for root causes, I agree it's a learning issue. If only they knew how to do this work, then they would be successful. It's not something else. It's not because we have a technology problem. It's not a process problem. The value is there for what the business is trying to achieve. And you're helping leaders to see that, right? You're having these conversations so that they see for themselves and agree with you that learning is actually the reason why. You have to be very careful not to be a widget shop where you're just waiting for somebody to give you an excuse to make e-learning on whatever, it, you know, and then you go off and you make your widget. You're doing this job because you're helping the business to be successful. And if you do that process, if you have that conversation with stakeholders, leaders in the company to help them see that, and if you do the job well to really help them explore that, and it is for sure, you know, at least 99.9% sure that learning is the root cause, and you give that learning to that audience, you should ideally have moved the needle. And when you help somebody to see that, and you can do that measurement process correctly, that learning really did help, because all the leaders care about in operations and other places in the business, they want to be successful. And they're going to be successful if their people do what they think needs to be done.
Yeah.
Well, it even comes back to that, you know, the SMART goals, not just for you and your the members of your team, but then those SMART goals and connecting those to the business, helping the business at large recognize the value of, you know, taking that that structure as a framework for just even talking about these things and demonstrating value, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm curious about, you know, when Kara asked the question and we were talking about it, I felt like that could be coming from so many different angles. So I'm not 100% confident if I answered Kara's question well. So hopefully she'll pipe into the chat or somebody else will to make sure that, okay, she says yes.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, it's weird. I totally get where Kara's coming from and that there are some training organizations out there that don't feel valued. But it still just makes it's a head scratcher, as they say, right? As to why an organization would even build a training department and have it and then not support it and not feel like it's an important part of the business, an important function of the business. And I just kind of get the sense that that occurs in those legacy enterprise organizations that just get really big, that there is just this tradition of having this training department. And there's the legacy of maybe that department didn't do great things way, way back then. And so some people that are still around remember the bad things or the, you know, the bad experience they had with that group. And now, and they're not willing to say, hey, it's changed. There's a new manager. There's new people. There's new technologies. The team's doing different things now and better. And, you know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, I can kind of see where that's likely coming from. But it does always kind of, you know, make me think, gosh, you know, that's just, it's, but again, that's where, I know I'm just rambling, but it's where, yeah, that's where good management comes in, right? That's where when, if you're going to come into a situation like that as a manager of a training team or, a, you know, a bunch of instructional designers doing that work, that is your responsibility really to heal old wounds and to help the organization see the new value you're going to bring. And to that's why you're there.
Yeah, it was. You make such good points. And I was thinking about, you know, Kara's question further and what you were saying. And I realized when we do what we do, we often have to build in a story. And the reason why we build in stories is because we need to sell some with them. You know, what's in it for me? Why should I care? Why does this matter? And I think at the heart of the question might be, why should I care about learning? You know, what? Why does learning matter? And I'll have to find a link to a video that I saw recently on LinkedIn. It was a great video. It was this huge training class. I don't know, there seemed like there was like 200 people in the room. And they took 100 of those people and they lined them up, all facing the backs of the next person in front of them. So there's all these people, they're standing in a line. And the instructor comes and faces the first person in line. Everyone, wait. Sorry. Everybody's faced this way. Sorry. They're looking that way. And so the instructor taps that person on the shoulder and he turns around and the instructor does all this like funny, different like dance moves or whatever. And this person has to memorize it. And then they turn around and they tap the next person on the shoulder that only that person turns around and they do the same funky dance moves again. And now this person has to turn around and they do the same thing for 100 people down the line. And whether it's because some people are embarrassed to do all the crazy moves, so they're too embarrassed, so they do them smaller. And then somebody else like is like wild and crazy and they're like, oh, these little tiny moves, I'm gonna like make it bigger and jazzy and do like, they add a little something so that by the time they get to the end of the line, the last person has completely changed the original dance moves. It's something completely different. And the moral of this story is, if you don't have a centralized place to get information and to learn how to do a job, and the only way people get their information is through a communication channel of their peers and their managers, at some point down in the organization, somebody's doing that dance completely different. And so learning is really important to help keep the integrity and the consistency of what your company believes in and the way that they serve their customers and deliver products and services.
Yeah, I'm picturing the dancing.
Yeah, it's a great video. It's fun to watch.
You know, Chris, nobody ever really does the idiotic dance the way you do every morning. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing, though. You know, we wouldn't want. Well, earlier Lisa made a mention about cloning ourselves, and yeah, we don't want that to happen. We don't want any clones of Chris out there. So.
Oh, diversity is so valuable.
Exactly. Everybody bring something to the dance. But everybody do the processes the same way so that we're working for maximum efficiency. See, there's a difference between dancing and work.
One more story.
I know everyone's already made this connection, but I'm sure everybody has done the telephone thing, the same line thing, where somebody tells a story to the first person, they whisper it to them, and then by the time it gets to the end of the chain, the story is completely different or at least missing some key components of the story. I love the dance version better, by the way. But yeah, that telephone thing. And I can remember the very first time I did that, thinking to myself, oh, how easy is this going to be? This is going to be great. No problem at all. But the stark difference in the story, I'm sure the dance is the same way. By the time it gets through all those people, it's so incredibly different. And you're just left wondering, how did that happen? It was such a simple story, right? How did they mess it up all the way along the line? But it proves a very strong, powerful point that I think we forget. And it's just so important to continually communicate, or like you said, have that central repository or location for the gold copy, if you will, of what's supposed to be done or the processes or the information that needs to get done. So, yeah, wonderful story.
And I love the topic of diversity. It's the diversity of what somebody brings to a job. Everyone's passionate a little bit about, you know, something slightly different. You know, there's going to be people who are super passionate about different skill sets. Like, you know, they love to make video. They love to do this or that or whatever. Or, you know, Adam Weisslot just popped in my head. So he has a Muppet. So he brings like this. There's another story behind that for another day about, you know, Muppet skills to work. But you wouldn't believe all the different things that people bring to work. And you can capitalize on that, because as a leader, you shouldn't always feel like you have to come with the perfect vision. You have the answers and all your team has to do is execute on it. I heard a great story from somebody who said, one person in a crowd of 100 people, one person does not have to be the leader and come with the answer to a problem. If out of the 100 people, if everyone only had 1% of the puzzle piece of solving that problem, 1% of, you know, with everybody in 100 people, now you've got 100%, and it's bringing people together to put all those puzzle pieces together, and together you can create something more glorious than anything that you as the leader might have envisioned in the first place for a project or a problem. And, you know, having that teamwork where all voices matter and we're all working together, you wouldn't believe the amount of amazing things that have been born out of that kind of thinking, the kinds of projects that exist today because of, you know, everybody being able to bring something to the table in that way.
Oh, so there's been a whole, the chat's been railroaded, not railroaded, been taken over by both Men Without Hats references and the Muppets. So I mean, that's an absolutely great way to bring us, you know, full circle. Muppets as models for the training industry.
Big, cool. Yeah, big shout out to Adam, by the way, for those folks who don't know Adam Weisblatt, and we got to get him on the show. He is quite a talent, quite an incredible talent. So
yeah, and you will have a reason now to reach out to him. Reach out to him and ask him about his Muppet.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I follow him on Instagram, and so I see his art every single day. He shares his sketching and his artistic talents. And man, the guy he's just an incredible, incredible talent. And we, you know, there's so many people like Adam in our industry, and it's always so fun to get to know everybody and those little side skills and things that they do. Uh-huh. And to your point, I think it's super cool that you allowed him to bring that to work, right? And to show that and to share that and to make that part of the job and to promote it and to do something fun with it. I forget, are those videos, can you share the Muppet training that you did with him, or was that just sort of
I think so. I have to double check to make sure they're not proprietary, or at least there's one, there should be at least one in there that we can publicly share. But I need to double check with him and Nielsen, make sure that we're all good with, you know, sharing those. But use the word allow in there. I think that I think something you have to inspire in your culture is being risk takers. That is an example of something that Adam brought to the table without really asking for permission. It was, you know, he was being a risk taker and doing it. It certainly doesn't follow company branding. And so, you know, being a risk taker, maybe sometimes asking for forgiveness a little bit. I mean, you do have to kind of stay aligned and not be a bunch of wild cowboys, you know, to an extent, but take risks. You never know what's going to be the next, you know, epic thing that's going to take off and go viral inside of your company.
Well, I think as long as the Muppet adheres to corporate branding colors, then you're all set.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, that is the company green.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Don't ever mimic the CEO. That's just.
Brent, I think we probably reached the time that we should probably do some more dancing. Yeah, J-Rock with the It's Not Easy Being Green.
Yes.
Oh, man. We have such cool people here. Very cool. Lisa, thanks so much for joining us here today. It's been really fun. Lots of really cool things that we've been able to share. And I think lots of inspiration for all the folks who joined us today and the folks who check us out on the recording. So. Very cool. Thanks so much. Yeah. Donna says we're all dancing idiots. Yeah, that's pretty much, you know, the Muppet or the dancing baby. That was me. I've just grown up now.
Yeah, we don't talk about management enough, I don't think, and what it's like to manage teams. So there's a lot more to this conversation, and we should do this again.
Very much so. All right, so go out. We'll leave with the trumpets blaring, but also we're all thinking safety dance in the back of our mind as we dance through. So,
hey, and don't forget to join us at ATD.
Oh yeah. Did we have a link in here for the ATD? We didn't. We probably. That's a bad on my part.
Cute and it's good. Don't forget, if you're going to ATD, check us out.
Yeah. We're trying to put a thing together. So
special. Very cool. Time.
Have a great day, guys.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks, Lisa. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.